afternoon, everyone, and welcome to The Exchange. This is Cheryl Castile. My guest today in the studio, Rick Rowan, he's one of those guests that I'm not really sure where to start with him because he has so much going on in his life, separate from, during the day, Rick is involved in the hospitality industry in corporate sales. And but his other life, which I think makes up a good part of his other life, is involved in the arts, in music, theater, puppetry, movement. I want to get that one in there. And very, very extremely talented. If you had the opportunity to see Cité des Arts' recent production of Cabaret or at the Steampunk Festival, you saw my guest, Rick Rowan. So welcome, Rick.
Thank you. Thank you, Sherry. I appreciate being here.
Yeah, it's great to have
you on.
It's
an honor.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in New Iberia, right outside of New Iberia, about a mile from Lydia and Grand Mary, right there.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
And when did the arts come into your life, in whatever form?
Well, they came in actually early on. People's Elementary, Lydia, Louisiana, started playing trumpet in sixth grade. And played that for a couple of years, migrated to chorus in eighth grade.
Yeah.
Then went into art in ninth grade.
Yeah.
And then back into
visual art.
Yeah, visual art. And then went back into chorus for my senior years and got inspired to move on to music.
And you're a graduate here of UL.
I am.
In both your undergrad and graduate degree
in the music
department.
Yes, indeed. And many, many wonderful experiences at the department.
Yeah.
Very proud to say an alumnus of UL.
What stands out? Is there a couple different memories that stand out for you from going to school here in the music department?
You know what? I would say it was the musical experience in general, being part of the choral program under Dr. James Haygood, who's retired now, of course. But my second semester there was actually his first semester being in Lafayette, Louisiana, and taking the choral program on to new heights. And I would dare say that there wasn't a single thing that we didn't do in that choral department that didn't shape a little of who I was and who I was going to be at that time. One of the other great moments, though, was having Dr. Guthrie at the time introduce the early music program to the choral department and being part of that early music.
And when you talk about early music, you're talking time period.
Yes, absolutely. Music of the Middle Ages, the Renaissance, and a little bit of the Baroque.
Because I'm curious about that. And, and one of the things that, I don't know if we're going to talk about it right now or a little bit later, is that, you belong to some different things, such as you are or have been with the choir with Cathedral St. John.
That is correct.
And you belong to Puppeteers of America.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Society for Creative Anachronism.
Yes.
Which I don't think that is a society that a lot of people know about.
No, it's actually, if you think about how people nowadays recreate the Civil War.
Yeah,
well,
like the reenactors.
The reenactors. That's basically what we are, except we recreate the Middle Ages.
So, okay.
And we research the costumes, we research the music, we research the arts, and we try and recreate them. But always, just by default, with a little bit of anachronism.
Yeah. So for you, in your life, when you just mentioned about at UL and the early music, I'm thinking, though, somewhere that came in earlier in your life where you were fascinated by older times. I mean, where does that come from?
I'm so glad you asked that, because I was working at the Iberia Parish Library all throughout high school. Matter of fact, I started working there
at
15
okay.
and got an after-school job there. And one day I was filing books and records, LPs. That kind of lets everybody know how old
I am. For
those
of you who are LPs were the prior to CDs.
But I went ahead and I was filing the records and I had an album. It was the Waverly Consort. The album was called The Silver Swan. And I went to put it on the shelf, but for some reason, the cover caught me. You know, they say you can't judge a book by its cover.
Well, this
was one of those cases where you could, because my mind said, when I saw the picture of people in Renaissance costume, and it looked like it came right out of, one of the calligraphied codexes at the time. I was like, oh my gosh, I've got to know more about this. I brought it home, put it on
and
my...
And how old were you then? Like
I was... At this point, I would have been 16,
okay.
almost 17.
Yeah.
I went home and I put it on my record player. And from that day, I listened to it every single day of my high school year.
Wow.
The first thing I did when I got home. And at that point, I hadn't even, you know, thought about UL yet. I had no idea there was going to be an early music program there. I just knew I loved this music. It just spoke to a part of me like no other music had before.
And my guess is you could visualize some things as you would listen. I mean, I have the picture of this teenage kid putting that on and either kicking back or but visualizing whatever.
It was another time period. I mean, I think I probably visualized a little bit of Excalibur, the movie at the time.
I think that had
come out at that point. And maybe I had seen, you know, a couple of Disney films at the theater that, you know, were based around that kind of quote-unquote time period.
Yeah.
You know, just that sort of half fantasy, half historical, but definitely all imaginative.
Yeah, I mean, I am. I'm always curious of how people get into that time period, you know? Like, what is it about it that attracts you?
I always tell them I was born in that time period in
That's
a previous
right.
life.
This isn't your first go-around, is it?
It's not my first time at the movie.
No, it's not. It's not. So, but in high school, now you didn't mention theater at all.
Yeah, well, I was involved with theater in having chorus as my elective. And Helen Hodge, who's still very much active in the arts. Matter of fact, she just worked with IPAL Theater in New Iberia in helping them produce Chicago.
Yeah, they did. Okay.
Yes, indeed. And
now, Jess, were you in Chicago?
I was not in Chicago.
But
if I had known Helen Hodge was involved, I certainly would have. And had I known Jessica Jill Clard at the time, I definitely would have been involved. She was our Sally Bowles for
That's
Cabaret.
That's right.
Incredible, incredible
artist.
That's a
talented woman.
Yes, indeed.
The reason I bring up theater is in my brain, somebody who at that age gets taken by music from that period, theater just seems like it would be like the next step, you know, that somehow, whether it's with theater or something, you then want to act out what was going on at that time.
Oh, I did. In the privacy
costumes,
of my bedroom, I'm sure at that time I was dancing around or, you know, put on a cape or something of that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, because it's so much about the attire.
Yes.
I mean, it's the attitude, it's the sound, but it's the attire.
The attire, the vibrant colors.
Yeah.
Even though we don't often
imagine that except
through art, you know, visual art, the paintings of the time. You know, what we know about the music of that time period and about the costuming, a lot of it, a good percent of it, in my opinion, and it comes from the visual art of the time, the art that has survived.
Yeah.
You know, if not always the garments survived, the art did. And so you see these wonderful, you know, grand celebrations or these very dramatic scenes. And you can actually bring that to life with just a little bit of period music and a good costumer.
Yeah, but that's so true.
Right.
When you got into college,
yes,
was that what you wanted your focus to be in terms of a period of music?
My focus was voice, honestly. And, and Pat Shelby, who was my vocal instructor at the time, you know, he's the one who taught people like Sean Roy and a lot of the, you know, the people that are doing wonderful things vocally in opera and in New York and at the Met. He taught me, but I always say I was probably one of those students. You know, they have to take and have to sing opera, but they just quite don't have the passion for it. And I have to honestly say, you know, I didn't.
Yeah.
I sang it and I enjoyed it. Matter of fact, the only really things that I enjoyed singing at that point were the German Lieder, Schubert and Schumann, because the subject matter they chose for their Lieder, their songs were very dramatic. You know, the Erlkönig, the Elf King. I mean, you got to sing in three different voices, really. It was your voice, but you played three different characters in that one song. Meanwhile, the piano's there underneath you, you know, like a galloping horse.
That's right.
So, you know, I took to that. And then when I had my own choices, you know, outside of the curriculum, that's when I really, really found my passion in early music.
And have you continued to play an instrument besides your voice?
Yep. I play recorder. I play the tenor viol. I play.
Wait, you play the what?
The tenor viol. It's
what's
the
that?
Predecessor of the modern day cello. Matter of fact, if you
the viola da gamba is
the larger version of it. But got together with the Rosewood Consort, directed by Miss Alice Wallace at the time.
And Alice, who's also who does
who
the Hobgoblin.
Also introduced me. Yeah, introduced me to puppetry through Hobgoblin Hill. Well, she also got involved with UL when the early music program started with Dr. Guthrie. It all came together. It just all came together as if by a miracle.
Yeah.
But that's when I got involved with that. And now
what years are we talking about here when you're talking about
Do I really have to say?
Yeah, come on, just do it.
Okay. I graduated in 1987, and I would say Dr. Guthrie came on in 88 or 89.
You're young looking.
Well, thank you very much.
I would have placed it later than that. Okay. But that's the time period we're talking about
that's
here at UL.
Exactly.
Okay.
And now I continue doing that. I still play recorder mostly, a little bit of tenor viol, but I have my own early music consort called the Gypsy Dawn Consort. And we've performed for UL's Madrigal Dinner fundraisers. We've performed for ESA, the Episcopal School of Acadiana's Medieval Feast. We actually performed at St. John's Cathedral. Father Derwin at the time, Monsignor Derwin, excuse me, asked us, my consort, to play for the Christmas night mass. It was all candlelight.
Oh, how beautiful.
So if you can imagine candlelight in the cathedral with two recorders and a string. It's really moving times.
So, and this is, excuse my ignorance on this part of the music, but the recorder was a major instrument like at that time period?
Exactly. It was. It was a wood instrument with fingerings that I later found out are very much similar to a clarinet fingering. And, you know, we all know the recorder from grade school, or most people
where
you started playing Hot Cross Buns or Three Blind Mice. And so people think of it as a toy almost. But no, that was the major instrument of the time.
Which then makes sense why it would be one of the most common instruments that's introduced to kids at a young age. I did not know that.
Till
now. I thought the recorder was a modern instrument.
Dates all the way back to that period.
That's very interesting. Huh. Okay, so the kind of viol that you play, what kind of size is that?
It's about the size of a cello. Matter of fact, it's the predecessor of the modern-day cello,
the exact size. Okay.
But it has frets like a guitar.
Got it.
So you play it fretted, and when you bow it, instead of having an overhand bowing, which means your hand is on top of the bow, it's underhand bowing. So you're actually
I've seen people play an underhand bowing technique
for the viol family.
Okay. So, and you have free time when?
You know, I often wonder that myself.
Yeah, I mean,
and it's interesting you could say that because when I got into the hospitality industry, I wasn't making that much time anymore. And just recently, in recent years, found that I needed a balance, more of a balance. So I really started getting involved back with the arts as much as I could.
Yeah, so there was a period of time, though, where that got put aside.
Yeah, a lot got put aside.
I can't imagine, I see so many people, Rick, where the arts for them, it's their way of life. It's what brings them energy, what brings them stress reduction, you're a person who I have a really hard time seeing without that in their life.
Well, you know, we all have those periods.
Yeah, we do.
And you find yourself, you know, on one end of the spectrum or the other, and always forgetting that the best place to be is somewhere right about the middle.
Exactly.
And happy to say that, you know, I'm just now finding that again, especially with recent productions at Cité.
Yeah.
You know,
what got you to bring the arts back in?
Well, my partner, Andre Guillory, got involved in the arts with Cité in recent years, two years ago. Moved down to Louisiana, didn't really have an outlet, you know, himself.
Yeah.
Got into the Roadkill Diner, directed by Dennis Ward. Wasn't even supposed to be in there, but one of the characters backed out. And, Andre had been attending rehearsals, and, you know, Dennis goes, Andre, why don't you read for this?
Yeah.
Read for it, and next thing you know, was one of the two parts. One is one of the two, Tina and Tita Nut.
And he was funny.
Yeah,
exactly. He was so funny.
So anyway, you know, I looked at that and I said, gosh, you know, that could be me being this happy. Still.
Wait, so at that time you weren't in that production?
I was in the production. I was.
Ah,
he wasn't.
Got it.
But he
okay.
kind of filled in and then it went from there. And since then, he's actually done, I think, 4 productions at Cité.
Yeah.
And I just did a recent, we've both been in Cabaret again. But more to the point, it was seeing that joy in
from
someone.
Him.
Yeah, in someone else and then realizing that's where I was and that's where I need to be again.
Very nice.
Yes.
It's good that you recognized it at that point.
Absolutely.
You know? You brought in some cuts of music, Rick. And I'm going to put it out there. This is a challenge for guests that come on in the future. Rick wins the award for being the most organized guest with his music selection. Everything's typed up. Everything's labeled. It's absolutely wonderful.
Those who know me know that's my OCD coming out.
And it's I make Cecil a happy man. But you brought in some cuts, and this is from earlier on in your life, the first cut we're going to listen to. Can you tell us the title and give us a little
yes.
bit of history of that song?
So the title of this piece is Le Ciel n'a créé, which translated is Heaven Has Created. It's from the group Lojai, and the album is Acrobats et Musiciens. They're a group from Britannia in France.
Okay.
But this was the album Alice and I would listen to all the time on the way to a puppetry performance without fail. And I even started listening to it when I started doing sales calls for my current job. You know,
very
Houston
nice.
Is a 3.5-hour drive, and it was always one of the staples. So it was nice to be doing something professionally, but having it harken back to, you know, that creation, you know, just to kind of keep myself sharp.
That's
in that
right.
frame of mind. So this is from Lojai.
All right.
Thank you.
if you're just joining us, this is The Exchange, and my guest today is artist Rick Rowan. Now, you picked that song, Rick.
I did.
Because of meaning that it had to. But, Cecil, your history with that song and that group, actually. Are you there, Cecil?
Yes, I'm
come
here.
In.
Well, I just remembered when I heard Logi that they performed the Festival International once, maybe even twice. I don't exactly remember.
But how long ago was that?
That was, I think, was probably the early 1990s.
Oh,
and
okay.
I thought maybe that was his introduction to him. Maybe he did hear him and didn't realize if he was hanging with Alice back in those days.
Exactly, and I'm trying to remember. It could have been one of those festivals where we actually had, you know, performed our puppetry there, Hobgoblin Hill, and probably saw them.
Yeah. So he may have just put a piece back in that puzzle of you trying to, you know,
exactly.
Remember every little bit about your life. There you go. It's a beautiful, beautiful piece.
Yes.
And what I mentioned too to you when we were playing that is I can see that as a great song to put on before a sales call.
Yes.
I mean, it's stimulating.
Stimulating, absolutely.
You know? And I think sometimes, you know, Rick, you're a good person to talk to about that. You know, a lot of time, you'll hear from a number of people of the non-importance of the arts. And they won't necessarily talk about it that way, but they'll talk about it in terms of, maybe it's a comment of, so what's the big deal about that? Or that's just their little hobby. Or
right.
That's just, but I think sometimes people really need to pay attention, you know, even if you aren't an artist, what role the arts play in your life. And
exactly.
I think there's a lot of people, like what you just mentioned out there, who use especially music for some form of courage building, of stimulation.
Courage building.
For things like sales.
Emotional catharsis, no matter
exactly.
What it is, music is so much a part of people's lives, even in ways they don't know.
That's right.
Even while they're shopping in the store.
Exactly.
You know, that music that you subconsciously hear in the background.
It's there for a reason.
There's reasons it's there.
That's right.
So if we can use it all for the right reasons for ourselves personally, I think we'd be headed in the right direction.
And I think that a lot, too, with visual art, that's something for me that really works in terms of if I need a shot of inspiration or just to, if I see something that, especially with vibrant colors, that just grabs me, boy, that takes me to the next step that I need to get to in whatever it is I'm doing. You
exactly.
Know? Now, you were talking about puppetry.
Yes.
And your involvement with Hobgoblin. How did you... When did puppetry come into your life?
Well, once again, it all came together about the same time, going right back to UL,
okay.
Right back to the music department. Alice Wallace shows up on the scene to do early music with Dr. Guthrie and our consort at the time at the college level.
Yeah.
And then had this little party at her house, pulled out the puppets to see who would take the bait. And it was me.
And it was
and so. You
and
know,
what kind of puppets had they? Like, they what
are
you
talking? Alice describes them as a combination of a marionette and a hand puppet. They're not your traditional Muppet-style hand
exactly.
puppet. Take a marionette, take off the strings, put a sleeve on its back so that way your fingers are manipulating the head and the hands, and that's basically what
yeah,
it
yeah.
is. And Alice and I did that for 15 years and had wonderful times at Festivals International, Dickens on the Strand, Mobile, Alabama's First Night, and Puppeteers of America. Matter of fact, Alice recently won a Citation of Excellence from the Puppeteers of America for her puppetry.
Now, does she live here?
Yeah, she's in Youngsville. Yep.
She's
and
in
teaches
Youngsville.
Teaches gifted in St. Martin Parish.
That's right.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
And so, you know, nowadays, I recently had the opportunity to do puppetry again, but I always wanted to do rod puppets.
And can you explain for people that don't what those are?
Yes, a rod puppet is a puppet that sits on a rod where its two hands are also moved by two separate rods. You see it in a lot of Indonesian puppetry, Indonesian rod puppets,
okay.
with the colorful headdresses and faces, and sometimes the monsters are really, really colorful. But that form
what size are these?
14 inches.
Okay.
The rod puppets are about 14 inches in height, and for me, the style that I'm doing, I use wooden eggs that you would buy at a craft store, a wooden egg shape.
So you make them?
I make them, correct.
Ah.
And then, you know, just attire them for whatever show they're doing. And so speaking of Cité des Arts again, I was asked to do something for the steampunk festival we just had.
Yeah.
And I had no idea. But I thought to myself, you know what? I've always wanted to do rod puppets. And for some reason, Edgar Allan Poe was in my mind at the time. I don't know if it was because Christy asked me right before Halloween, but you know, The Raven. And that poem is so powerful that I saw it in a combination of puppetry and dramatization using human actors.
Yeah.
So I looked at Andre and I said, how would you like to do something involving puppetry? And he said, okay. And we put it together. We actually had Charlotte, one of the other persons who was in Cabaret. She was the young girl that sang the song a mannequin.
Yeah, where she sat on the lap.
Act, yes. Asked her if she would read it. And it turned out she was actually working on it at school
already. Wonderful.
So you see, there's no chances.
That's
you put
right.
artists together and nothing's coincidence.
Right.
So we decided to do it. She was going to read it. I had a puppet that was going to act as like a second psyche.
Okay, so let me ask you, let me back up first,
please.
About the rod puppets. Because I see you now. Mm-hmm. I mean, other folks can't on the radio.
I know, I can't
but
not talk without my hands.
No, which is good, though. But you're using two hands. Are these manipulated? You have to use both hands.
Yes. The first hand, and I'm left-handed, so I use my left hand to hold the body of the puppet.
Which is a rod?
Yes, is a rod. And the body and the rod are obscured by the material I use or the costume I use for the body. My other hand manipulates the other two rods or one rod individually for the hand gestures. Sort of the way you would manipulate chopsticks.
Got it.
And so...
Do they have faces?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Well, in the case of the steampunk style that I chose for my puppets.
Yeah.
Not so much faces as little gears and masks that
very cool.
that, you know, looked like faces.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, so instead of one eye there was this gear.
Yeah.
You know, and instead of a mouth there was just another little, you know, hint of a gear coming around in a leather mask with more gears on it. You know, just to kind of fit into the theme.
Sure.
And as they were reading, I was the person sitting in my chamber on a midnight dreary, but then when I nod off to sleep, weak and weary, all of a sudden the rod puppet wakes up. So I fall asleep, and it's almost like a dream fantasy sequence where the rod puppet then becomes, acts out what's being spoken of, you know, and the thinking of Lenore and the
and
Raven.
So both of you, though, were in the production.
Yes, Andre was the...
No, but I mean that you and the puppet.
Oh,
God, both,
absolutely.
It's not like how you know someone in puppetry where somebody comes out and you just forget that that person's there.
Exactly.
But interesting.
We were both there. Yes.
Huh. You know, because I had Elsa Dimitriadis from Wonderlust was on.
Wonderful troupe.
Yeah. And that was one of the things we talked about was when somebody, you know, when you have puppets as part of a production, but the person manipulating them is there, but people just, you forget that that person is there.
Even amongst puppeteers of America, there's lots of discussion about, you know, the validity of that and what it does for the illusion or how it, you know, works against the illusion. But in my humble opinion, there is no wrong answer there.
No, I don't.
As long as you can justify why the person's there, whether they are the, what is it, Deus machinus est, or the, you know, just the shadow, or the, you know, the conscience of the puppet.
Sure.
I think there's ways that you can make it all work.
Yeah. So in this production that you had done during the steampunk, that was the first time that you had done something with the rod puppet.
The very first time.
Oh,
Matter of fact, it was the first time the three of us were working together. Christy even asked us, so what do I call you guys? She goes, do I call you Rick Rowan Puppets? I said, no, absolutely not. I said, you know, this is, you know, it was more adult oriented because we knew the audience for the steampunk festival was going to be mainly adults. I said, you know, I really don't know. We show up that day and we're about to go on stage and she's about to introduce us. She goes, so what do I call you? I said, I don't know. She goes, well, I came up with this name.
That's so great. She's
How
so
about
good
the Archimedes Trio?
Yeah.
I said, you know what? That is incredible.
There you go.
And it's done.
Yeah.
And that's what we're going to use anytime we ever do our rod puppets again for any steampunk festival or maybe just this whole genre of puppetry.
That's
we will
right.
be the Archimedes Trio.
So who were the other two? What's Andre's last name?
Andre Guillory.
Yeah.
Originally from Wichita, Kansas.
Wow. He came to a perfect place with the last name.
Absolutely. His father's from Elton. There you go.
Oh, all right.
And then Charlotte. Charlotte.
And Charlotte, the young girl.
Charlotte,
that's
right. She's Lisa Osborne's daughter. Lisa Osborne, who does all that wonderful sculpture that's at ACA right now and was at the Alamo and was over at Paul and Lulu Hilliard's Museum.
Sure.
The large structures. The women
I didn't realize that was her daughter.
That's her daughter, yeah.
Very nice.
So that was us, the trio.
Yeah. So, and then the puppets, too, just for people to understand what you did with Sarah.
Right.
Describe those kind of puppets. The puppets that she hit with Hobgoblin, that's a different...
Okay. Yeah, so the difference between that is Alice and I's puppets had a...
Had
a cloth sleeve that was part of the puppet. It was a backing to the puppet, and it was mainly consistent of black velvet, so you didn't see where the hand went in. But the puppets themselves still stood on their own 2 feet. And a matter of fact, I created a cast... from the Roman de Reynard, the story of Reynard the Fox. And it was my first cast I had created on my own.
Yeah.
And that was the hardest part, was remembering all the putting together of the puppets and how it all worked. And luckily we had been doing it for 15 years, otherwise it wouldn't have worked.
Yeah.
But managed to put that together. The difference with the rod is you don't have quite so elaborate a costume.
Got it.
Because the puppet itself is sort of this draped figure. Your hand is under the drape of the fabric, and it's more about the face and the hands. Now, did I choose that because it's really difficult to create a costume for a rod puppet?
Mm-hmm.
It's possible, but if you look at most Indonesian rod puppets, that really is all they are, a big skirt attached to a torso that's either wood, fabric, or just the head.
Yeah. It's really nice. I know that you know, people here at the station were talking to you about before the show. It's wonderful what's happening in this area with people coming in with puppetry.
Yes, absolutely.
Because it's not something that, now you talk about with Alice, that she's been around, you know, and what you did with her for a while. But not that there were then other troops.
Exactly.
I mean, that's the thing you're hearing about now.
Even for wolves in the walls. Remember the wolves
that.
In the walls?
Yes.
You know, you had people who maybe weren't puppeteers.
Yeah.
But because of what's been going on in our area and because of, you know, the UL, because of the arts grants, because of the Lafayette Public Library, bringing in all these artists, people have finally gotten... It's finally caught on.
Yeah.
And I think that's the important thing about all of the arts. You know, it's so important for all this funding is because you never know who has the next great, best idea to bring in a group that's going to inspire someone.
That's right.
Regardless of what the art media is or what the form is. Absolutely.
And I just think how great for artists in this area to now have, I mean, to have this group of people who, I mean, they know what they're doing.
And they do.
You know, with puppets. You know, whatever group that they're from, you now have... you know, this great opportunity for people like to learn.
Yes.
You know, and to carry that on or to bring that into their own artistic.
You know, what's funny is that, you know, the Greater Chamber of Commerce, Lafayette Parish Government, all of a sudden they're all getting into these ideas of collaborate and innovate.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, well, you know what? It's what we artists have been doing all
isn't
along. What a great idea. And keep going for it because that's
right.
What's going to make it happen.
That's right.
If you can start getting our business people and our government people here to start collaborating as they, you know, as the new push is in innovating, you know, based on different people's experiences and fortes, then it's what I've always believed about Lafayette. We are going places. And it is a great place to be, and it's going to be a wonderful ride.
I think it's such a good thing about what you said about the arts, you know, and because you'll see that throughout history that, you know, countries may not have been getting along, but, you know, the artists did from those countries.
Always.
You know?
Yes.
Whether that was through music, you know, or visual art people.
Or puppetry.
Mm-hmm. The other thing I think about puppetry that I had to... I don't know, learn or relearn. And it was about during Wolves of the Wall, when they were doing that production, Wolves on the Wall, was that puppetry is not just about something for young children.
That's correct. And that's the direction I'm going in. I would love to see adult puppet theater happen where adults can come and enjoy, whether it harkens back to their own, you know, childhoods when they saw their first show, or just anything. There's so many opportunities there that I think it should be explored by many, many more.
Yeah, that's right. I'm with you on that. We're going to take a short break here and listen to, and because we'll come back and talk about that with a piece of music that has been inspiring to you during times of your life when you were doing script writing.
Yes.
And script writing for UL.
Correct.
For the Madrigal.
For the Madrigal Dinner. It's the Baltimore Consort. They actually performed at UL. Dr. Andrea Lowy at the time had a wonderful series of artists coming in, a lot of early period musicians, and we actually got to listen to the Baltimore Consort. And they were wonderful people, and we took them all out to eat. Right after at one of our local pizza joints. Wonderful.
Very nice.
So this is La Rock and Roll, the CD, the Baltimore Consort, and the piece is Brawl de la Torche, The Dance of the Torches. It's by Michael Pretorius, who happens to be one of my favorite all-time composers.
Yeah.
And I would play early period music whenever I was doing the script writing or just making puppets.
Exactly. All right. Let's listen. Welcome back, and this is The Exchange on KRVS 88.7 FM or on the web at krvs.org. Please take some time, too, if you're not one of the people listening to us on the Internet today, to check out KRVS's website. There, as I guess I say a lot of times, this station has such a great wealth of local producers that do wonderful programs, and each one its own unique. It's just fabulous. But take some time and go to the website and check out. You can get the podcast and listen to some of the shows, and maybe it's a good time to introduce yourself to a show that you haven't had the opportunity to listen to because of your day-to-day schedule. Also, we are public supported, so we do have a safe and secure website if you'd like to support the station through that. Or, you know, if you're in the area at UL, pop in and meet the folks here at the station and offer some support for that. My guest today is our artist Rick Rowan, and we've been talking about that's what I when I said that to you earlier about like what do you do in your free time, but you know but free time what but why not free time is about art, because you are involved in music, in theater, in puppetry, and I'm curious, with music being what you went to school for, what you pursued in studies, has that come through with maybe what you want to pursue in puppetry, that it, like a musical puppetry performance?
You know, honestly, music has been a part of puppetry for a very long time.
Yeah.
Once again, even hearkening back to the Indonesian rod puppets,
okay.
You know, the whole tradition there of telling the Ramayanadan is done with music and shadow puppets and our rod puppets. But for me personally, I see the two mixing and would love to do it in that way, but it's hard to hold a puppet in one hand and a recorder in the other.
That's right.
And I would want to do that.
But you know what? If anybody could do it, you could.
Well, you know what?
You could do it.
I have been known to play the recorder by nose before.
There you go.
There you go. but it's it's something that I love so much that at some point it's hard to give that part, if you will, to someone else. But a combination of the two, you know, you start off at the introduction of a puppet show with early music or with a musical piece has been done, and I would love to see done in the future. And actually, you know, just thinking about that now, it'd be interesting to hear people's comments about what music I would play before Edgar Allan Poe's trilogy.
Yeah,
you know, that's
right.
Something I'm working toward with my rod puppets. I want to be able to do maybe three pieces
for next year.
You know, The Raven and The Telltale Heart. And thanks to Judith Merriweather, who we spoke to right before this,
that's
The Cask
right.
of Amontillado.
There you go.
And thank you, Judith, for offering that suggestion. It's been taken and duly noted. but, you know, that's part of the excitement of the creation process, is finding the exact right song that encompasses the spirit of the production, our play, or just whatever it is you're doing.
Exactly.
You know, with the Madrigal dinners at UL, it was very easy. You know, I would write the script.
Easy for you.
Oh.
I'm going to throw that in there.
Thank you. you know, I would write the script in rhymed verse for the performers, for Dr. Haygood and his choral department.
Yeah.
They would perform it in between meal courses. And then naturally, you used early period madrigals and motets and music for them to sing and for my consort to play.
What's motets?
Motets are the church pieces. They're pieces that were inspired by the church and by religious subject matter.
Okay.
Madrigals were all the fa-la-las, tra-la-las, and more secular matters.
Got it. Okay. All right.
I would love to do that more per your question, and hopefully I'm answering it to your satisfaction. But it's an easy blend once you put your mind to it, and it becomes an exciting part of the creative process.
You know, one thing that I want to talk to you about before we run out of time here today, because really we should have 2 hours today. But what fascinated me and attracted me to you initially was when I'd seen you at in a theater production at CITE, and it was about your movement, your use of your body in movement. And I'm curious about that in your life and, you know, that artistic piece. I don't know if that's something that you have focused on in your life artistically.
Well, good question. And I would love to answer it by starting off saying it's all part of the same creative process. It's all part of the same creative consciousness and experience. When I was at UL performing in the choral department, I had friends in the dance department and State of La Danse, a wonderful program that they still do to this day. Well, there were never enough guys to audition for the seniors' projects. There were only so many guys in the dance department. So, of course, they would come to the music department and the theater department and, you know, beg us to perform. And I can tell you right now, I cannot do ballet. I have two left feet when it comes to ballet. But you give me a good modern dance, and I think I did okay.
Yeah, yeah.
We did Shakers. I did two different pieces by Sissy Whipp, who is a dear friend
and
an inspiration to me in so many ways.
That's right.
Did a couple of her pieces back then. So movement was always there. And that fed into when the puppets had to move. There were ways, and understand this, all happens subconsciously. I'm a firm believer in you have to experience as much of the arts as you can. You have to attend dance performances. Mm-hmm. You have to go to the theater. You have to see puppet shows. You have to see groups perform. You have to go to the Acadiana Symphony. All of that goes into your mind.
Yeah.
And even though you may forget bits and pieces of it, the next day, the important parts are back there in your subconscious, roiling around, sometimes in this maelstrom of creative impulse and spirit and inspiration.
Yeah.
And then when you sit down to do any type of art, any particular art form, some part of that is going to come out in a way
that's
that you didn't expect, but in a way that you have one of those moments where you say, oh my gosh, this brings me back to this.
Mm-hmm.
So those
that's
experiences,
a really good point.
Those experiences with dance, those experiences with early music, the experience with puppetry, the experiences with script writing and performing, it all just stays with you and sort of acts as a toolbox.
Yeah.
A creative toolbox.
Yeah.
To go back to.
Do you know, in tying the puppets into that with movement, do you, because really what you do with how I've seen you move your body, it fascinates me. And I'm also wondering too with the puppets, do you ever act out what you want the puppet to do yourself, like in front of a mirror?
Well, let me tell you, all of these scripts that I wrote for UL, a great majority of them were inspired by puppet shows. And I just wrote the scripts. I really wrote them for the puppets. I imagined that there were puppets performing it. And if it was funny enough,
a puppet.
If it was, well, thank you.
No, I mean, yeah, and I mean that as a compliment, but I mean how you move.
No, thank you. I think it was influenced by it.
Yeah.
And that's why I really want to explore rod puppets more, because the fluidity of the rod puppet with the two individual hands and that body of material, literally the body of the rod puppet with the flowing material, there's so much more opportunity there for some really great dramatic moves and, hearkening back to what you said, setting some of it to music.
Yeah.
Like a good rod puppet could easily do Salome's Dance of the Seven Veils.
Yeah.
You know, whereas the puppetry I did before was very limited in what you could do with the little hands, which were basically little paddles.
Okay.
And the way that they were,
you know
what I'm saying? Basically paddles.
Yeah.
Well, now with a rod puppet and two individually moving hands on sticks, there's so many different things. You can spin a rod puppet on its axis and have it flare around and have the skirt flare around and the hands just out of control, and then bring it right back in with the two rods controlling the next gestures.
Hmm.
So
now, is there...
And I just thought of that.
Yeah,
I'm going to have to do Salome now.
He's brilliant, folks.
You're inspiring me.
For people out there that maybe do not know that they have seen rod puppets, is that something we would have seen on something, or...
Oh my gosh, that's a hard one, Sherry.
Yeah, I didn't know if that's...
Even right now, I'm trying to think back to... It's only because of my study of the history of puppetry.
Were they on the Ed Sullivan show?
I don't think he had rod puppets.
No, but
you know, I do know what
you're
saying. No, exactly. But I think the whole rod puppetry thing comes from, first of all, having been part of Puppeteers of America, having researched puppetry online and in books, and in the Eastern tradition, the Middle Eastern tradition, that's it. It's rod puppetry and shadow puppetry.
Hmm.
And so all you have to do is just, you know, take a little extra step.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I want to mention, too, for people that are interested in puppetry, that Puppeteers of America website, that's a nice website.
It is a wonderful
website.
It's a
good resource.
Absolutely.
Isn't it?
Yes.
So if you just, you know, go online and search for Puppeteers of America, their website.
POFA.org, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah.
I'm ashamed to say it's been a while since I went to the website.
But it was a great resource for learning, for finding out who's out there, who's doing what,
absolutely.
How are they doing it, you know. So I would encourage people to go to that.
Me too.
Let's mention a bit before we wrap up here, too, about the recent steampunk festival, because like you talked about, that's something that you've already volunteered to help out with for next year. For people that don't know what that is.
And I'm sure there are a lot right now, and I'd be glad to explain in my own words.
Exactly.
You ask any person who participates in steampunk, they probably have a different concept. But
when you research steampunk, like if you get online and research, that's what comes up very consistently, that it's based on their opinion. No, it's based on their opinion.
Exactly.
Well,
it's a time period that never existed, except maybe in our minds. If anybody ever saw Kenneth Branagh and Will Smith in the Wild West, that's a perfect example of steampunk. It's the Victorian period and the Wild West meets gadgetry. It's a little bit of anachronism. You know, you have people with electronic monocles in a top hat. You have a cowboy with a gun that would have never existed. It looks like something that might come out of Aliens 3 or something.
It's
really fascinating. Another one of those things that I would invite everybody to research themselves.
Yeah.
Just so you can come up with your own opinion. But for me, personally, it's an opportunity to get back into my Victorian costumes that I've been having sitting in the closet.
Thank God,
and then,
huh?
Yes. And actually do things like Poe and do my rod puppets and dress the rod puppets in little Victorian clothing with gears and gadgetry. And what I've researched is you have to have a pair of goggles somewhere.
What is that about?
I don't know.
Okay. Because I tried to find that out.
I really don't know. I'm sure it's about something.
Yeah.
But once again, I think it's a very personal thing. I think just in attending the Steampunk Festival at Cité recently, each individual was in their own world. And it took a while, it looked, for everyone's worlds to collide. But everyone did. And that's the wonderful thing about it. And the only thing that you have to do to break the ice is ask them about their costume.
Exactly.
And then you've got what steampunk is.
Yeah. You know, I think it was Christy Guillory had mentioned, I think, going to the Renaissance Festival.
Yes.
Was it Hammond Renaissance Festival. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That she thought she was seeing a lot of steampunk.
Yes. People, you have to understand there's only so many creative outlets for people who are interested in all this, whether they be in the Society for Creative Anachronism, whether they be steampunk, whether they are just a Rennie, which is a Ren Festival goer.
Yeah.
There's only so many times that we get to explore that part of our imagination and dress up. I call it dress up. There's so many, any opportunity I get to dress up, I do, because it's fun.
Yeah.
It opens up that creative flow again, really. And the Steampunk Festival here is just one of those many opportunities.
Yeah, and so, you know, keep that in mind for next year, folks, because there's going to be some people working throughout this next year on whatever it is that they're going to offer.
Exactly.
You know, what they individually are going to bring into that. That's always been, I'm going to say, that's always been a wonderful, wonderful thing about Cité des Arts, is that it's a great place, you know, for people to be whatever it is they want to be.
Exactly.
I've always loved that about that. You know, Maureen Brennan started that place, that was from day one, you know, with what she put out there. So you're going to be a busy, busy man this next year because you are going to be working on your Archimedes Trio puppetry. You are going to prepare for next year's Steampunk Festival.
Yes.
Do you still sing each?
Are you still with St.
John's?
St. John's Cathedral, High Mass at 11.
Wow.
And it's a wonderful service.
And sometimes
a performance, because Tom Neal is an incredible creative director and always chooses historical pieces.
Yeah.
So these motets I was telling you about, and even at some points, ones that were more tuned towards magical oriented, but especially motets, you can hear perform there.
My guess is there's going to be some fabulous productions for Christmas.
Yes, absolutely. Especially Lessons and Carols. I'm not quite sure what evening that is, but make sure to check out St. John's own website to see when Lessons and Carols will be.
Yeah. You know, when you talk about singing High Mass, which, you know, growing up, being raised in the Catholic Church, that music, it all just fits with
it does
with your interest with, you know, that old
yes
t- you know
it does.
I mean, it, I, that that's the part that it it seems whatever you take part in, that has a piece in it, that has an influence.
Yeah, and I don't think there was any coincidence about it at all. I really believe that it was all meant to happen just that way.
Do you find that, though, in day-to-day dress? Not at work, but
right.
Like just when you're going out or hanging out, do you...
Yeah.
Do you dress in that style?
No, I don't. But I have been known to accessorize a little bit eccentrically.
Because,
you know, there's always that ring or that pendant that you would love to wear because it was something you bought at a festival or so.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, I do.
I'm going to tell you, there was a young man, I used to work at Cité, and he was in high school at the time. And it was fascinating because before I got to know him, I thought he was coming... And he was in some theater productions that were going on. And I thought he would always come dressed in his costume.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then one day I had asked the cast of this one production, it was some younger people, what role is he playing? And they said, well, no, he's not in the play. And I said, well, what is he? And then they explained to me that's just who he is.
Exactly.
That he, and you know, I loved that about, and I just love him today, how many years later. But that just was something that grabbed me, that here is a person who just allows himself to be whatever he's feeling that day and doesn't care what anybody's going to.
And thank God for Cité, like you said earlier.
Yeah.
He went there to be who he was.
Exactly.
Wonderful.
Yeah. It was a fascinating thing. So anyways, Rick Rowan, it has been a pleasure having you on today.
Mine as well, Sherry.
Yeah,
thank you.
It's going to be great to see what comes out of you this next.
Thank you.
That comes out of you and from you this next year. We're going to end with a piece you brought. That gives you, you call it your musical espresso.
It is. It's my musical shot of espresso. It's a piece that it's by Carl Jenkins, who composed, well, his first album is called Adiemus, which after getting the album, reading the cover, doesn't mean anything. This guy created his own made-up words to fit his music. So when I listen to it, the song itself can inspire whatever it I want it to inspire, whatever maybe is already there, sitting latent in my subconscious. But it's one of those pieces that as soon as I put it on, I find myself moving, dancing around the house. I have a bell in one part of my house. I end up ringing that bell at some point in the song. I have an African bullhorn. At one point, I blow the bullhorn.
That's a good visual to go out on.
But anyway, by the end, it's just, it gets me going.
All right, everybody have a good week. If you hear Rick Rowan in anything, go to it.